Good morning and welcome to a special edition of the UNA School of the Arts Soda Pop Podcast. I'm Dr. Terrence Brown, Executive Director of the UNA School of the Arts, and joining us ahead of her 11 a.m. presentation in the McKinney Center Demonstration Kitchen is award-winning chef and author Natalie Dupree. We're going to start just with a few questions and sure. Won't take up too much of your time, but we are so honored to have you here in the Shoals with us, and I wanted to have an opportunity to get to talk with you and for you to be able to express anything that you like to our listening base. First question would be, did you develop a love of food and cooking at a young age?
You know, I really didn't have anyone to emulate. To tell you the truth, my parents were divorced, and after my father left, my mother just didn't have time to cook. She was like every other single mother, and so we sort of ate catch as catch can. I was on a book committee, and we were reviewing some books, including I think it was I Hate to Cook by Peg Bracken, and in there she has a pot pie where she makes a little hole in the middle and pours in sherry. And then she spreads sour cream on top and bakes it. Now, that was my idea of gourmet.
It sounds like my idea from when I grew up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't know anything like that. My mother would talk about the fact that she had made duck and lamb when she was younger, but she didn't have that kind of time. Yeah.
Well, I guess going with that, you know, I came from a largely Southern cooking tradition, and, you know, a lot of fat back and ham hocks and things
well,
like that.
Well, I mean, I love all that, you know? Yeah.
I guess leading into that, do you feel it's important to encourage a new generation of potential chefs?
Oh, you know it is. And I think that it's very important to do what you all do here, which is to get the basics so that people really are grounded and can withstand pressure, but also can be creative with using what they know. It's so important to know what you know what you don't know. Yeah, you can see someone make biscuits 1,000 times and not understand how they feel. And the same thing is true with puff pastry or any exotic foods that you want to make. If you don't actually fondle the food and make it, you don't know what you're aiming for.
Exactly.
So you have to eat it, you have to handle it, you have to smell it, all of that. And that's what you really get from a cooking school is...
I think it's interesting that you bring up the senses and using those to cultivate a stronger sense of a product, for lack of a better word, with food and cuisine. I think we, in terms of creativity, we don't tend to express that much in higher education, and saying you have to know your senses in order to be able to utilize them to go with the basic foundation to get a better product.
Right.
And with that, how do you feel that culinary arts play an important role in everyday life?
Well, it's a discipline. And once you have a discipline and understand how to, and I'm not a tidy person or not known as an organized person in that sense, but I have a mental sense of logistics, of how to get around, of when to do something and what to do next. And it goes from cooking to everything that I do. You just get a sense of timing. You know what's 15 minutes is in your bones, because that's what takes 15 minutes, something that you do. And so you have all of those things, and you have a discipline. You know how to come in and fix your mise en place, or what we used to call setting up your trays, and in my day in cooking school, and you would just set up your trays. And then once you know that you have to get things structured in order to be able to get things done, then you can move on. And that's true in anything in life.
Yeah.
So that's what's helpful. You just learn those things, and they're not painful like writing your ABCs 50 times or something. They're fun. The cooking is fun. It pulls you in. It's exciting. It's challenging. You know you can't just walk in and do it, but you think you can.
Yeah, I think for me, the culinary, because, you know, just heading over to the School of the Arts, I'm learning about other disciplines outside of my original, which was music. And I am learning the differences and also the strong similarities between each. And I think what I'm learning in terms of what you mentioned, discipline earlier, that trend tends to carry over to all of the arts.
That's all of the arts are the same way, I think, yeah. in that. And you have the same tendencies. Mm-hmm. We were doing a photo shoot this week, and I wasn't there. I wasn't doing the cooking. I wasn't able to be there. So I came in and saw some things. And so the lady that was cooking, who was very competent, when you have a recipe, you usually say something like serves 4 to 6.
Yeah.
So she was always going with the 6. Hmm. And when I do that recipe, I always go for the 4.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you have people in music that always tend to be a little loud, and you have to tone them down. You have that in art where they
use too much color.
Colors. Right. Yeah. Or where they make their focus area too large.
Yeah, exactly.
So all the arts are the same way, and we all have natural tendencies. So you have to know what they are. Hmm. And then you can work from that. You can say, okay, I'm either going to make the canvas bigger so I can draw a bigger focal point, or I'm going to work in a bigger auditorium, I guess, or a bigger band or whatever, or I'm going to turn the amp down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think it tells you who you really are when you cook, I think.
When we talk about the arts and we talk about there's always a forward movement or forward momentum in arts, and in that being in any kind of the performance side or the education side, there is a new movement that's happening, the new Southern cooking movement. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I was, I guess, the first person to coin the word for my book in 1986, I guess it was. But I had a restaurant out in the country. Hmm. In Social Circle, Georgia.
Social Circle.
It's Georgia. About the size of Florence, really? Alabama. Maybe not as big.
Well, maybe you can look at bringing a Social Circle to here to Florence.
So anyway, it was across from the world's largest rural bus station called The Hub, and across from the Tri-Cattle Auction Barn.
Oh, wow.
So I was able to buy all my vegetables from the local people that were growing them, or they would just want to get rid of tomatoes, you know, or zucchini when they were first planting zucchini, which is kind of a new vegetable to the South.
Oh, yeah, it is, you know. We
had yellow squash.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
But not zucchini. And so when people were... You didn't get yellow squash boats when you planted your yellow squash. Nobody complained about getting the big yellow squash. But when you get zucchini, when you grow zucchini, you wind up with a big boat if you don't pick your vegetables. So then you have to look at it and say, oh, well, what am I going to put in that boat?
Yeah.
You know, I got to use it. That's all I've got to serve today. So then you do... a technique that you know maybe from your mother, where you stuff a yellow squash with bread and chopped up squash and cheese.
That's how cheese, you can't go wrong with cheese.
Bread on top of it. So then you do that for four and cut it into four or whatever you do. But you find your way to compensate it. So New Southern Cooking is a mix of new vegetables and old techniques. Or old vegetables, turnip greens, and maybe new techniques. Maybe a stir fry or my mother-in-law, my favorite former husband's stepmother, once had some English people come stay with her, and they planted her garden for her, and they planted little turnip greens. Well, she'd never seen such a thing. And so she went out and picked these little greens and made a salad. She didn't have any idea that you could make a salad green, a salad of turnip greens. Yeah. So that was kind of her natural New Southern Cooking. After a while, we have so many new foods out there.
I think I really enjoy your developing, you know, new styles, new techniques, new foods that are new to a region, and then also staying true with the heritage of cooking from that place. It reminds me when I was growing up, my mom's Patricia Brown, she's a prison guard, and when she was growing
up, good for
her. She runs the kitchen at the prison. But what's interesting is that when I was growing up, it was sort of a similar practice. She would find things that, you know, what was there? What can you do?
Right.
And you combine them and I never knew what went into it. I just knew the ending product was delicious.
Right. Exactly. But you know, that memory, I think people that grew up in the South have a memory of a taste, a memory of a flavor, and they extrapolate it to other things.
Yeah.
So that they're coming up with creative dishes, but they have that memory of that lovely, cheesy dish. Mm. But maybe they'll mix it with something that's not so fattening, or maybe they'll...
I'm going to deviate from my original plan because this conversation has really become really exciting to me. How do you feel, or what do you feel the role of cuisine into the community at large, and also how it can play a role in propelling the community forward and also resolving conflicts?
Food is a control issue. Hmm. Food is the most powerful control issue there is. Hmm. You can live without clothes. In some places, you can live without a house.
That's true.
Or anything over your head. But you cannot live without food.
You're right.
And that's how dictators control the people that they want to control, is by how much food comes in. I mean, we might give aid packages, for instance, to a really poor country, but the dictator will let it out slowly. Mm. Or it will be somewhere maybe where someone was hoping to sell it for a profit, so they took it. So food is control. Whoever controls your food, whether it's the anorexic or the grandmother that says, eat, you know, that's the stereotypical Italian grandmother or maybe even Southern, or whether it's the three-year-old that wants to throw their food at you, or a child that doesn't want to eat just to make you mad because they know you're in a hurry. They want more of your attention or whatever. So in terms of the community, you have to remember that feeding the community and understanding the control of the community is important to the community, and that food has a very powerful, if undiscerned, role when you're affluent. But when you're not affluent, food is control. I mean, I think that's why I really like being the cook.
Yeah.
We were just talking. I went out to breakfast, and I'm a little whiny because I have a breakfast that I'm used to, and it's a simple breakfast. I don't want a lot of stuff when I first get up because usually then I'm cooking, and I'm nibbling all the way. I just want to get up and have something simple.
Exactly.
And where I was, I ordered something, and I thought it was going to be simple, and it wasn't. And I realize, you know, whenever I get in that situation and get whiny, that it's because I'm not in control, and I don't get what I want.
Exactly.
Couldn't describe it to the waitress, you know, just didn't make myself clear.
It's like, it's easier to say, well, do you mind if I just go to your kitchen?
Yeah, that's right. Can I just go in there and look around and find something simple?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Right.
So you know, it's like that for, if you're thinking about any artistic discipline, especially I would say use my own for in music, when I'm, you know, singing a piece, you know, I'm at the mercy of the conductor. However, when the roles reverse and I'm the conductor, then I can control the tempo. I can control
that's
the phrasing
right.
and the color and the timbre that's produced and also rehearsal time.
That's
you
right.
can control
right.
those things. And I don't think it's necessarily a negative. It's just that
no.
it's a good that there has to be someone who can lead in a situation.
Right.
And there's some people who can follow. And then sometimes you have to reverse so you can learn how to lead.
Right.
But I think it's good to know that about oneself so you may be able to move forward. And
well, that's right.
It's good.
And if you understand the role of food in the community, like what do you need? Do you need to have does that community need a sandwich shop?
Yeah.
Or do they need a simple breakfast shop?
Exactly.
You know, or do they need a brunch place where you can get all the exotic, or do they just need a meet and three for lunch, or maybe they need something? But you can make your mark by learning your strengths through conducting it, and then execute it according to the needs of the community.
I think you brought up something very important that I've never thought about in terms of meeting the needs of the community. You have to first know what they need.
Right.
And then you can provide it. And I really enjoy how never in your whole description did you mention how the bottom line in terms of dividends and profits play into the need of the community. We know that whenever you do something
right.
that, you know, it has to sustain itself financially. However, but you never mentioned that. You always say, what do the people need? What do the community need and how you can provide it? And I like that.
Well, when I started my first restaurant, well, the first chef restaurant where I was chef was in Mallorca.
Mm-hmm.
And I made $50 a week. So, you know, there we are. But it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it was probably high cotton for Spain at the time,
yeah.
you know. But then when in social circle, we took my favorite former husband and I took this old warehouse, mm-hmm. and we had to clean it and we had to gut it and all of that. And the bank, he was going to run an antique shop, and I was going to do the cooking and treat it like a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did, but the bank said, that nasty old bank,
yes,
banker, he said, you know, you can't use this restaurant. I'm not going to loan you money for this restaurant because restaurants just don't go. You know, they don't make money. They're risky.
Wow.
But I can invest in the antiques because they're substantial.
Yeah.
I can sell them. So I ran the world's largest, the largest paper route in Covington, Georgia, for to earn enough money
wow.
to build my restaurant. And my husband and I and my brother did it physically. We went and they did. They went and got railroad ties for the front, and we took fabric and reversed it. It was 25 cents a yard, and glued it on got it on the walls. And I had a Sears refrigerator
wow.
to start. So you when you learn to build it from scratch, then you're certainly aware of the cost, but it becomes part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
And so you incorporate that in there. So then I realized I couldn't have a variety of a menu because I couldn't afford the waste.
Yeah.
And I couldn't afford the storage space in the Sears refrigerator. So I had to temper it, and so I had it be that the first person that called got to order the menu.
Wow. That's
and then amazing. I had, you know, a steak. In those days, that was the thing, where now you might have a vegetarian menu.
Yeah.
But then I made my profit. It was a lot better than running a paper route.
Well, I guess that leads into my last question, because you've already alluded to this. What allows you to maintain your passion for cooking?
Boy, that is a good question. And if you have three children at home, it's a lot harder because they are not responsive necessarily.
Yeah.
Once again, because food is a control issue. I have two foster children that moved in with me. And when they moved in with me, they were so tired of eating with new people. And they sensed that I couldn't wait to sit with them in this loving maternal way. And so they wouldn't eat with me. So I had to put food in the refrigerator for them, and they had to reheat it in the microwave.
Yeah.
But they got to choose what they wanted to eat and when and how until we got to be friends. And so that's kind of the same thing, if you will.
Yeah.
And you just, you learn to cook for the people that appreciate you if you possibly can. And if you can't, then you don't expend your passion on it. You find someone else that you have your passion for. And you understand that this is just nuts and bolts. You're just fixing the car so it'll run. Wow. And then you put your passion into the things that you really like. And you can figure out a way to do that, like making a caramel cake or making puff pastry or whatever it is you want, and then you find someone to sell it to.
Yeah.
Even if you have to get up in the morning early to make puff pastry because it's hot, you can still find someone. I made 2 carrot cakes a day.
Wow.
A double recipe.
Oh my goodness.
And sold it to a little restaurant down the street that just wanted a dessert. That was when I first moved back to the United States from France. That was the first thing I did. I mean, you look at what the need is, and that's, once you fulfill a need, a real need, and you're appreciated, then your passion comes.
Hmm.
We're all egotistical, you know? And so that's part of how you find what you love, and then you look and say, well, who needs what I love? Who needs what I want to do? And then as you grow, you're the people that you feed grow. So that's what I do anyway.
Wow. That's probably...
My husband eats everything. My husband is a garbage can. I couldn't really. Now, my brother really does view food as a control issue, I think.
Yeah.
He doesn't eat a lot at my house. I don't know when the last time was. You know, we're close.
Yeah.
But he's my baby brother and 6 years younger. And no matter how old we get, that's still there. So, you know, he doesn't really want to offer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have what he wants. He doesn't like it, you know? And so you just have to find someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I will tell you, we are honored that you chose to come and be with us.
Thank you.
And to give our students knowledge and give our community knowledge. And we look forward to your demonstration today and for coming in into the Soda office. This is our first year in the School of the Arts. And
it's just wonderful here.
And it's really grown. And, you know, because we are honored to have people and host people like you, our students can see that there's a world far beyond the limitations of their city. And
right.
They can bring that knowledge back to the people here as well and keep building community.
Right. And so, if they can just find one step to take.
Yeah.
In the right direction, It's all step by step. It's all step by step. I didn't start with any money. The first restaurant I owned cost less than $5,000. But I had the training from the London Cordon Bleu. Yeah. Even though I wasn't the best cook in the class. I just wanted to do it more than anyone, I guess.
Well, that's some words of wisdom, because you don't always have to think to be the best. You right. just have to whoever has the most passion and drive.
That's true. And I will say also that once you get into it, you do find what you love, and then you expand your other ways, and you become maybe the best at the one thing that you're good at. You just need one thing, one step at a time.
Well, a special thank you to you and to the Department of Visual Arts and Design, and especially the culinary program, and having you here, and for having the foresight to have you here and to be with us today.
Well, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Everyone needs to learn to cook because they need to have control over their own life. If you can't cook, you can't have control over your own life. And then you get to choose to give your control to someone else.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, and we thank look you. Forward to having you back again.
And I hope your students just fill you up and enjoy this wonderful facility.
I'm sure they are, and I'm sure today they're going to eat everything up that you have up to say. So
well, thank you.
Well, thank you, and that's all we have for today. Join us on our next episode.
Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by UNA School of the Arts, produced by Mark Gallegos and Lainey Green, hosted by Dr. Terrence Brown. Special thanks to Monica Collier and the SOTA staff.